Okay, so you go to your mandatory school for 10 years and you've learned stuff. And then you go to university and you've learned stuff. And then you get into the workplace and you just work. That's like the idea of a sort of a slave in my mind, or an economic slave.
Love what you hear? Then please support the Wildlife Unschooling podcast by checking the donation link in the podcast description. And leave me a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and connect with me on social media for updates. And please feel free to drop me a text. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for being part of this incredible journey.
Yeah, bye bye. Adios. Adios, muchachos.
Okay, nice. Very welcome, Rick. We met at the Bitcoin, what was the name? Bitcoin Atlantis conference in Madeira. And we connected over the topic of unschooling, homeschooling. And we decided to record an episode about that because you had so many questions about how unschooling, homeschooling works. So I was thinking like, yeah, that's nice because so many people are asking themselves these exact questions. And I think your questions were really awesome. So very welcome. Thank you that you're here with me.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Tell me a bit about yourself, what you want to share before we start with the questions. What do you want to share with the audience regarding who you are, what you do, what kind of vision you have for your family and everything?
Yeah, so just like the rest of us, I guess, the guys and girls listening, I'm a Bitcoiner, just a simple human being trying to find the way and asking questions. Like, you know, I've been pretty interested in the homeschooling things for a while now. Not necessarily because I thought it more attractive than school, but kind of more around the lines of like what's happening to the school system itself, and not wanting, like, being a recent father, like my son's nearly 2 years old. These are the things I've got to kind of try and consider before he gets there. So it's like future planning. So I don't want him caught up in the mess that is the current sort of schooling system, is a nice way to say it. So super interesting to hear your thoughts and kind of get into a community of people who think the same way. And so I suppose I'm kind of putting myself out there to attract the same energy back, basically.
So nice. Yes, you already sent me some questions, and sometimes when I mean, there are a lot of questions every day that people are asking questions about unschooling, especially because I think homeschooling people know what it is, and unschooling people like, so they don't do anything at all. It's true, we don't do anything at all. We just live. So my favorite question out of all your questions was, what age do they start reading, and is it bad if this is delayed? And I need to say, well, I want to ask you something. Did you learn how to read at the same age as everyone else around you? And was it an issue or a topic when you grew up?
No, it was not an issue or a topic when I grew up. However, it was, I'm a strange case. So I excelled pretty well in the school system. I've obviously turned into the human being that I am because of certain influences from my parents, from school. I did grow up in a really small town. So, and then went to school with what I believe had good morals and ethics. However, when I started to learn to read, it was before I even joined school. It was in like kindergarten, and my parents are kind of proud of that. They just found out the one day that I'd been writing letters in the sand with some other boy at the school, and I'd kind of taught myself to read effectively with the help of another kid. Nice. Which kind of lends itself to the answer. I mean, I'm very aware of the answer. I don't think it matters when you learn to read. I think it becomes a necessity when you want to go from learning by doing to learning by researching. It just becomes necessary. But, you know, nice to talk about it because, like you said, I think there isn't really a thing unless you're in the school system and you get a report card to say, well, your kid's not reading well. And, you know, so what? Who cares?
True.
So it's a little bit different case for me. I mean, I learned to read super early. And one thing about that is it didn't really help me because even though I learned to read much earlier than most kids, I still read at a level that is a lot slower than most people. So it's kind of like I plateaued. Well, I started earlier, but I plateaued way sooner. So I don't really have the ability to speed read or anything like that. When I read, I kind of reading the words in my head. And I guess that comes from a kind of a research way of reading, where if you're reading like a sort of a nonfiction or something or a fiction story or whatever, you can skim and you'll get the gist of the whole thing. But when you're reading science or some subject that you want to actually learn, you have to really read and slowly and get the concepts and things. And unfortunately, that carries through to how I read fiction and nonfiction as well. So it's like super slow.
But that's cool. Because I was thinking about that question a lot, I can give you some examples that I found quite interesting throughout my personal unschooling story with my kid, because my kid, he hates reading, and I'm a German teacher, and when he was four, five, six, I had that feeling like, oh my God, he needs to learn how to read. It's time for him. And he really didn't want that. And I almost ruined our relationship because I was so pushy. I was preparing like funny games. I thought they were funny. Of course they weren't funny. They were not fun at all. So, and I was super pushy. And then I realized, okay, I need to stop that and I need to figure out a better way of teaching him how to read. And then I started that podcast. And I had one dude on my podcast. His name is Pat Ferenga. He's an unschooling advocate and he has three daughters and they learned how to read, of course, by themselves without being taught at different ages. Three daughters, very intelligent human beings, three different ages. And there was another mom, an unschooling mom. She told me the story of there was a 17-year-old dude and he was unschooled or he attended a democratic school, I think, and he didn't know how to read at all. Then he started traveling after he finished school, and then he needed to learn how to read because he felt like he needed to because he was traveling, he was on his own. And then within a very short period of time he taught himself how to read, and that I think is beautiful. I mean, that is, it's extreme. It's a very extreme example of reading. But I can say my kid, I don't know for how long he was able to read before he was just reading out loud something. And I was so surprised. I was like, oh my God, you are able to read? And he was like, dude, of course I know how to read. I'm not stupid. And I was like, okay. Oh, yeah, I didn't know that. And because for him, it was so normal that someday he just had the need to learn how to read because he was, I think, playing games like Minecraft and these kind of things. And if you want to research something, you have to write and read at some point. And I know that he tried a lot of stuff to listen to videos on YouTube and these kind of things. But if you really go deep into gaming and programming and these things, you have to have certain knowledge and skills. So he just did that by himself. And since then I know, okay, they are capable of doing things by themselves on their own. And that made me so relaxed in terms of Because I was always, as a German teacher, like, oh my God, he's missing out. He doesn't know the structure of the language. He doesn't have no feeling for the grammatical system behind the language and everything. And then I was like, does he even need that? First of all, if he's not interested in it, that's fine. And they are so intelligent. And if you just let them roam free, they are doing what they need to do. And that's pretty
cool. What's crazy is I don't remember anything from English class at school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what a past participle is. I don't remember what a structure or a subject and object of a sentence is and all these nonsense words. However, when I type, I have an intuition about like being grammatically correct. And I'm able to do it better than a lot of people that understand what a past participle is and what all these things mean in a sentence. And I don't struggle with it. I don't struggle with spelling. I don't struggle with grammar. I know where to put an apostrophe. I know how to spell the there, and there. You know, like, but yet I probably almost failed English in high school, being my first language.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's just a necessary thing. It's something I expect of myself. Like I expect higher standards of being able to write emails and things like that, because I don't want to look or sound like an idiot when I'm writing an email to an engineering firm or whatever that needs to understand what I'm trying to say. And then I'm writing things like all weird. Like, yeah, it's just an expectation on myself, which I think is probably where in some way the kids do it themselves as well. There's an expectation of themselves to want to learn or need. It's a need. They need to do it, so they do it.
So
generally, the need drives the task, which drives the understanding, which drives the ability eventually. A want is probably slightly different, but you know, you could fall away from a want, but you can't fall away from a need. So yeah, it's super interesting.
It is. And I think we are role models, and I'm really in love with the languages. I speak 6 languages, and I'm always trying to see every detail of every sentence in certain contexts. Not every time I'm speaking, but there is a lot of stuff out there that really is so interesting that I want to really understand every nuance of everything. And of course, my son knows that I'm always like looking very deep into certain kind of literature, and he's copy-pasting that behavior. And I really like that, because I know that although he might not be some kind of linguistic person, I don't know yet. So, but he doesn't need to step in my, how do you say that in English? He doesn't need
step
to follow
in your
my
shoes
path.
Or follow yes, your, in yeah. Your
shoes. Yeah. He doesn't need to, just because I'm really crazy when it comes to language and grammatical stuff and these kind of things. He doesn't need to be, but seeing that he's copying my behavior and he's seeing the depth of language as a form of art, that is already enough for me to be very, yeah, just relieved and happy with, whatever he's doing. And he's completely unschooled, so there's nobody telling him like, oh, you have to have a look at this kind of nothing. So that's quite nice, I guess. But you sent me so many questions, and there is one question I really like, and that's connected to the previous question. We're asking about curriculums and how do we keep up with them. And yeah. I think that's an interesting question. And first of all, I want to tell you I'm not keeping up at all. I don't give a shit. I couldn't care less. And it's because if you see it globally, every city, every school has a different curriculum. So who invented the right curriculum? I don't know. I have no clue who has the best, who has the worst. I just know for myself that most of the people who are working on these plans, what kids need to learn, are not even close to me or my kids. So they don't know what our needs are, and my needs and my kids' needs might be very different from the kids that are maybe living around the corner, maybe living in another country. So I'm wondering, there's no standard for what kids should be knowing or what kind of skills they should have in certain kind of ages, because I think the world is so crazy and an awesome place, and there are so many different influences in so many different areas of our life. And if you move to another country, you need very different skills. Maybe if you move to another kind of landscape, I mean forest, beach, blah blah blah, you have to have different skills. So I think this whole planning what kids need to learn, for me is just like, I don't understand that at all, because we're individuals, and I don't feel like I don't feel stupid or in any way behind just because you know more about Bitcoin than me. I mean, I'm learning from you. And so people are always like asking, like, yeah, how do you know if he's behind or if he's keeping up? I just don't care. I don't check that, because I just see his progress as a person, as a human being, as an individual. And as long as I see progress in there, that's perfect.
What's your sort of benchmark on progress? What does that mean to you?
So what I feel like, if you're a healthy human being, you want to go forward. You are learning all the time, every second of your life. And if this comes to if this is standing still, you're sick, I guess. And I've never seen that in my kid's life, that he somehow had a period where he wasn't curious, where he didn't want to try out something new, or where he didn't deepen his knowledge about a certain thing. So there was always something going on. And as long as there is something going on, I know, okay, he's learning, he's doing whatever. And I just call that living, because I compare that to me, to myself. I went to one of the best schools in Germany. I studied for 10 years. I have various degrees in whatever kind of stuff. But I didn't really learn anything in that whole period. I didn't really learn. And I'm not even good in the stuff I studied. I couldn't even work in my job. It's impossible for me. I cannot even imagine doing that. So everything I learned after finishing university, I learned very quickly, first of all. And I was a good student. I was a good pupil back in school. And all these things I learned in a rapid speed, and because I was interested. And since then, I know, if you enjoy life, you're going to learn no matter what. And even if it's something that I cannot measure because it's inside his head, I see that he's growing into a very cool person. He's funny, and he's understanding more and more layers of language. And that is a sign for me of high intelligence. So that's my measurement, I would say, happiness and productivity and the ability to deep dive into very different kind of topics. Doesn't matter if it's bushcraft or is it Minecraft, I don't care. But to see that he's actively involved, something he came up with, that is for me the perfect measurement and makes me happy. And I think that's a good measurement. But I guess your son is too. And
yeah,
I think it's the same, because you see him developing a new skill every second, basically.
Exactly. So yeah. So it is just kind of more like I guess it's a subjective feeling of progression, which When I look at him, I can't really explain it either. I can't put it into words, and I don't have a physical. Well, we've got his cousin who's 5 weeks older. The next door neighbor's child, which I think is maybe 2 months younger. You kind of just have these benchmarks. I just compare them and that's it. But really, I don't really compare. Like, for me, the best thing is that I leave, not the best thing. I have to leave home for about 2 months at a time when I go to work, and I come back and the changes that I'm seeing, he's like, so like the last time I was away, he didn't have the ability to explain things in sentences. Everything was one word, more this, more that, more was his trigger word, and then more something. So he had the ability to put like two words together. Now he's using sentences at 20 months old. And I'm just like, I'm blown away because at 20 months of life, this little creature is starting to make sentences. And it's like, so that's the kind of process I see. But coming back to the schooling system and or not really the schooling system, but the path of learning.
Mm.
And you said you studied for 10 years and got various degrees and things. I was exactly the same. I was a star student, except for English, even though my first language is English. I got A's for almost everything, art, geography, science, maths, even Afrikaans, my second language.
Nice.
Then I went to university, did mechanical engineering, but kind of just sort of coasted through. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So my dad was an engineer, so I did engineering. Eventually I enjoyed the topic, but only after I left university. So I imagine now, if I had to go back to university, I'd probably apply myself way more because I have a genuine interest in it now. Since I've been working in an engineering field for 12, 15 years, I don't even know how long it is anymore, but that's besides the point. The point being, yeah, is I left university at 23 years old, and I'd say my greatest time of learning was from the age of 24 till now, 36. I've done more learning in these 12 years than I did in the 10 years of schooling and 5 years of university. And I mean, it just goes to show when you're left to your own devices and you actually want to do a subject or learn about a subject, like I put the time in. Like some people will go to bed at night and read a book, chill out, and that's what relaxes them, and that's fair enough. Or watch some TV, some shitty TV, or write, or, you know, something nice, something relaxing. I like to go to bed and research dark topics or crazy conspiracy theories or some scientific thing that isn't in the mainstream science or some medical. I love medical topics as well. Like, it's one of my favorite things to research is like things around health, which has got nothing to do with my schooling, got nothing to do with my university. It's just a proper interest of mine. And so I like to go to bed researching things because I have a really active mind. And the only way to turn it off is to feed that need, that thirst for knowledge. Otherwise I got a bit anxious. So for me, the counter to anxiety is what most people would get anxiety from. It's a very strange way to think about it, but that's what I relax. I relax when I figure out a topic that is kind of anxiety driving for everyone else, for lots of people. So yeah, just goes to show, like the learning only happens when you're super interested in something. The real learning.
And you can't be stopped.
No,
that's not.
I'm still learning, and I'm still just growing and learning and learning and learning. So, like, that's another point. Is like, okay, so you go to your mandatory school for 10 years, and you've learned stuff, and then you go to university, and you've learned stuff, and then you get into the workplace, and you just work. That's like the idea of a sort of a slave in my mind, or an economic slave. You've done the hard lines, you know, you've put in the effort, and now you can just coast through life, earning your salary, paying your tax, and that's it. And then you die, and what do you leave behind? So, I don't know. I think it's way better to just continue learning all the way up.
True.
I think that's what most of us do. I think most people do.
And I think it's natural.
It's very rare for somebody who probably coasts the way I do, where I just explained there. But I think if you give yourself the time, you'll probably learn a hell of a lot more. Like if you actually allow yourself to do it, break out of the economic slavery mindset and choose a path that you just want to learn about something.
True.
Yeah.
True. And I think it's natural to never stop learning. I cannot imagine to stop researching, to stop learning, to stop trying new things. I could never imagine that. But are you...
I mean, I wonder, it's probably almost impossible to not learn.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the same. It's almost impossible. But unfortunately, I know people who stop learning. And these people are very unhappy. So I think that's correlated, your happiness and your energy levels and everything, to how much you are feeding yourself, like mental food, of course.
That's interesting.
It is. But there are people who are like really stuck. I call them stuck, and I think that's very, very unhealthy. But I don't know.
It's like
really
a kind
know.
Of a survival mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Because recently I've been learning about sort of pain management, and I suffer from chronic back and knee pain, and I have done for the last 18 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And recently I stumbled across John Sarno's work, being sort of mind over pain, or mind over back pain, or the mind-body prescription. He wrote quite a few books. And then I met a guy on Twitter who does a lot of the work based around him, signed up for his course, and it's changed me completely. Like I now see these injuries that I had as not injuries at all. I'm not injured. I'm not broken. It's in my head. It's in my mind.
Yeah. It's in the form of communication, I think.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Really,
it has been. It's been a crazy, crazy revelationary ride through this. To completely change your mindset from the last 18 years thinking that I have a severe debilitating injury that can't be healed without surgery. To now, I still suffer from the pain. They hit me. I'm coming back to why I'm saying this whole story. It's about the sort of freeze thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's your sympathetic and your parasympathetic nervous system and all this. And like animals in the wild, if there's too much threat and danger, the animal shuts down and freezes. And you're going to freeze. It's a high stress environment. The body just goes into a complete protection mechanism and hopes and prays that if you're dead, the hunter won't hunt you. And it's kind of, I'm wondering if it's the same thing in the mind of these people that kind of get stuck in life. It's just like it's too much societal pressure, too much pressure in general, and you've had enough. You just shut everything out. Stop. You know, put yourself up some imaginary padded walls and be in your safe space and just hope and pray that whatever is threatening you doesn't come and kill you, like putting it in a sort of a metaphorical way.
But that's true.
I wonder if that's kind of a way around, well, an explanation for that.
But I have the same. Sometimes when I'm really stressed out, I can't do anything. I'm just lying on the floor and hoping for the day to... be over, and maybe God gives me another chance next day. But this freeze mode, that's real.
It is real. And I've actually since then experienced it properly. Like 3 days before I have to go to work, I'm like, I have to leave my family again. I have to go to work. And I just get like incredible, I just got incredibly moody. Couldn't control my own impulses and anxiety and all this, and eventually I just sat on the staircase and I kind of froze for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't move.
I feel you.
And so you kind of have to ride it out, but there's a way to then reintegrate and to learn from that freeze function and why did you freeze and what causes you this. And so I'm starting to pick up the patterns as to why I feel the pain. But, you know, since doing the work, the pain has very much gone away. Like, I mean, I'm sitting probably right now at like a mild uncomfortability, I'd say probably like a 2 out of 10. Whereas when I started it, I was consistently a 6 or 7 out of 10,
wow.
pushed up into like a 9. You know, sometimes I could, there was nights where I could barely lift my son out of his cot.
Wow, my back was so sore.
Like, you know, it's a huge change just by changing my mind.
It is. And you know what? One day I cut my finger off and the doctors told me, yeah, I need surgery because other way the finger's not going to be a normal finger again, blah, blah. And I didn't believe that. And I was very, very afraid of having surgery because I already had surgery at the same finger for the same issue and it was horrible. And so I was like, no, this time I'm not going to do it. And I really had no time because I needed to pick up my son from kindergarten in an hour. So I was like, dude, you just put it back on. You put something through, like over it, tape or something, and we're going to see each other again next week. I think that's going to be fine. And I needed to sign something that I'm a mentally sick person, obviously, that is refusing surgery for something that severe. But I really believe that I could heal my finger at home just by being with myself, meditating, and it worked. My finger mm-hmm. is still here. It's working fine. And
yeah, somatic yeah. experiencing, somatic yeah, so, tracking.
And you know what? Our mind is—it's—it's a great place, and I think the more we—and I feel that it has a lot to do with unschooling. The stronger our mind is, the stronger we are. The more we are capable of learning, becoming, overcoming, even this freeze thing. I really like that because in the last couple of weeks, this topic somehow fell into my life over and over again, this freeze mode. And I didn't even know I had freeze mode until people always were talking about freeze mode. And I was like, dude, I have that. I'm really a freeze mode person. And that's good because since then, even though I'm in freeze mode, now my mental, I would say, yeah, my inner discussion about what is happening completely changed. It changed to, okay, now you are in a freeze mode. Enjoy the freeze mode. Obviously, mm-hmm. you have to go through it, and it's passing way faster. I don't say I don't get into freeze mode anymore. I do sometimes, but I enjoy it as a break, and then I'm like, yeah. wow, now it's over, and it's way faster. And I'm way more conscious about the reasons why I fell into a freeze mode, and I can change that afterwards. Like, I mean, when I'm back among the living. Yesterday was a freeze mode. No, the day before was a real freeze mode day. The whole day I was just like, oh my God, I just need to lie on the floor feeling Mother Earth.
Yeah.
I can't do anything. And I just enjoyed it this time because I understood that life is hard. We all have to take a break. And if I don't do it properly, my body will tell me to just.
Exactly.
Do it.
And I think, and that's a lot of, I know we're going way off topic here, but that's a lot of the work that I've been doing was these, this pain that I'm feeling is coined by Sano called TMS or tension myositis syndrome. And effectively the mechanism behind this is the body's, the unconscious mind has only one method to warn you about something. Because it remembers past traumas and you might not as the conscious person, but the conscious person has control over the body. The unconscious person has control over the sort of given functions like the heartbeat, the breathing, and these reflexive things. And so say it's a bit of a harsh example, but it's the best example. Say you were somebody who was raped by your father. And you walk down the road and some guy walks past you wearing the same cologne that your father wore. You don't recognize it as the conscious person, but your unconscious mind does. And, you know, you go on with your day, nothing happens. And then 2-3 days later, all of a sudden, there's some pain that goes through your body and it gets worse and worse and worse. The problem is you can't track, you know, what happened and why. And, you know, then you'd have to go into the process and figure out, you probably will never figure it out, but you track yourself and you sort of feel yourself through it. You allow your body to feel these things. That kind of relieves it. So it's the same thing, like going into the freeze mode, you know, enjoying the freeze mode. And coming back to the mind, the way that the mind does this, the unconscious mind, is it actually physically starves oxygen to certain parts of your body. That's the sort of scientific mechanism behind this. And so you need to train your mind to say, or your unconscious mind, your conscious mind needs to say to the unconscious mind that I'm okay, I'm strong, I'm healthy, I'm not currently physically being raped, it's okay, it was just a smell, you know, like there's nothing to worry about. And so, and that takes a lot of time and practice and a lot of meditation, somatic tracking. You get all sorts of ways to do it. But basically, it's kind of taming the mind or calming the mind, because it is a protection mechanism. The freeze is also a protective mechanism. You know, all of this is just protection. It's your brain's way of saying, I'm worried. I need to fix you, or I need to protect you.
But that's not even that much of topic, because I think for like an unschooling mom, my biggest thing is mind work, working on your own mind, like mindset, resilience, and all these things. So I really think this is something I wasn't taught in school. I wasn't taught in university at all. I was taught to shut up and do as you're told, and that's it. And since I had my son, I really came back to feeling my body, feeling what is happening. Before, I never had a connection to my mind, my body, my thoughts, nothing like that. But through becoming a mom, I became more and more conscious and more aware of when we train our mind and when we are working with our mind, we have like superpowers. So I think that's a huge topic in our family, for sure. I think this is one of the most important things we can teach our kids that is missed out in school. And I think it's missed out on purpose, but that's just...
I agree fully. I imagine what the world would look like.
Yeah.
Without schooling systems and everyone collectively knowing that they are superhuman.
Yeah.
At the same time,
just
we would have usurped these people long ago that set curriculums, that designed the curriculums, yeah, that designed these nefarious things to create a slave or a factory worker, effectively. I mean, that's the Marxist thing, right? It's in the Communist Manifesto. Send the woman into work, and so that the only option left is to have the kids go to the state school and become a slave. So you break the family and you create workers. Simple.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah.
I mean, the plan is so evil and it's working really so well. I'm really, I need to say well done. Well done from a perspective of just seeing what it is without putting my emotions in it. The plan really worked out great. It's awesome.
It has worked out very well. I must, I agree. I give it to them. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
But it's never going to last.
No, yeah. It can't because humans are humans. And I think it's hard to keep humans from being humans. I mean, there are differences, but I always felt like I need to be in the wilderness. I need to be outside. I don't belong in these structures and all these things. And they couldn't beat that out of me. It was just there. So I think really strong human beings who are not meant to be in a very artificial system, because that is what it is. Nature is the natural system and everything else is just a very artificial system. You can't keep humans there forever. Eventually, they will wake up. And if it's just one, this one will wake up others. So I think there's a ripple effect, although I hate that word, ripple. I will call it the Bitcoin effect. The Bitcoin effect. It's the decentralized mind. So I think this is something that is happening naturally. And that brings me to another question you had about socialization. And that's very interesting because people are so obsessed with socialization. And my favorite thing is to ask them, Okay, you've been sitting in class with like 20 to 30 same age kids, and you weren't allowed to talk. You weren't even allowed to socialize. And in the like 30 minute break where everyone was beating everyone else up, I don't know what happened in the breaks. that's not socialization. So what I see now, and I wasn't very sure of how this would work out for my family, for like my unschooling journey. I see my kid is so well socialized because he's spending time with babies, with toddlers, with same age kids, with way older human beings. And what I see is that he's really, yeah, I call it decentralized education, because he's picking on so many brains. Let it be a baby. He's learning from babies as well. But what I see is that he really tries to pull everyone in who is intelligent enough to teach him something. And he gets his socialization from just living. We are living in a very small village, like a really small village. So everyone knows everyone. And when he's like going on a walk with the dogs through the village to the forest or something, he's always meeting someone. And it's never like 10 same age kids are with him to socialize him. And I think it's quite maybe even dangerous to think that a same age peer group is going to socialize each other. Like, what are they going to teach each other? It's, for me, that's a horrible scenario. I want my kid to be with everyone and not like only same age kids. And what I really think is, do we even know these kids and what kind of influence they bring from their homes? Because from all the parents I met through being a mom the last 11 years, I need to say, as always, like at least 98% of the people out there are just crazy, and you don't want to have that influence on your kid, and especially not 8 hours a day in form of a mini version of these humans, these people. So what I think socialization is maybe, yeah, people have the wrong idea about what that looks like. And for us, it's normal to spend time with people different ages. But when you're in school, it's called socialization. If you sit next to someone the same age and you don't talk to that person at all because you're not allowed to. So I think socialization is something that happens, first of all, at home. And secondly, I really hope for all the kids out there that they are finding people not the same age that have a great influence on them, because this is where the party is starting. I really feel like that. What are your thoughts on socialization and all these things?
Well, I hit a point where you was talking about these kids hanging around with each other at the same age for 30 minutes or even after school. And I wonder, that kind of socializing is effectively just reinforcement,
yeah,
of the indoctrination. So if 10 kids went to the same class or same classes all day, then after school met up, they're all in the same social circle. It's kind of like a feedback or reinforcement feedback, yeah, loop that never sort of branches out. There's no external influence. There doesn't need to be, because, and it kind of takes me to, I don't know if you've ever read this article. It's my favorite article in Bitcoin. It's written by Croesus, not the philosopher, but his handle on Twitter. I forget his name. Myers is his surname, but it's, okay, I don't have a great memory, but it's around, the title is something like Why the Yuppie Elite Will Never Get Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And effectively the concept is that these bankers or mostly it's about bankers, he's in the financial world, they all kind of go to the same work, get fed the same Bloomberg terminal bullshit, and then go for drinks after work, and are all extremely highly successful, in inverted commas, but very highly paid. And so this reinforcement loop, they're sitting around a table having beers after work, very late at night, not around their family because this is the way that bankers live and work. They effectively feed each other the same answers. And so if one, it's around Bitcoin, and it's why they won't get Bitcoin, is because they, being the most successful out of all of their friends who are not, you know, so their social group, they're the top, they're the pinnacle. They believe that they're the pinnacle, right? So if Bloomberg tells them that Bitcoin's bad, and then they all physically agree that Bitcoin's bad around the table, Bitcoin must be bad. Now you see the fallacy in that, right? Like you see the sort of the issue with that is there's no external influence. There's no something changing their mind or changing one of their minds. And as soon as one of their minds do change, a gang up happens. And they all bombard this one person who dared to question the narrative or dared to break from the narrative, gets bombarded by the other nine. And to fight an argument like that is extremely difficult. You have to be an extremely good debater to be able to fight nine different angles at once. So I feel like socializing in the school level, yes, becomes a kind of a closed loop system or a hermetically sealed system with no available inputs and outputs. Or there's an output, it's a collective output, but it's the educational output or the what the state wants you to output, which is very low energy, hard work, low pay your taxes, blah, 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 you know, like that, all that. And it kind of then leads me on to the question, to ask you a question, is to say, is the concept that we are fed about socialization, is that a psyop? You know, is that a way to distract from the fact that we actually don't need that much socialization? You get it no matter where you are. You interact with people all the time, your family, your friends, their friends, younger friends, your neighbors. That's socialization.
Yeah. And I think we all need different levels of socialization. Not everyone is outgoing and needs 2 million friends. Mm-hmm. Some people are very happy with just 2 friends. And I need to say, if I had no kid at all, if I was just me, I would live like a monk. I would be a monk. I'm very sure about that. And I wouldn't be unhappy. Not at all. And I think socialization is something... I've been to the jungle with my kid and the tribe that we visited. They were socializing because they were living together and they weren't separated. And I really feel like the bad thing that is happening is the separation of the family, not that kids are not spending time with other kids the same age. I don't even believe that this is necessary. I think it's nice if they have someone almost maybe the same age that they can hang out with and they share interests and the same vibe in their stage of life, so to say, because that has an impact on them, because they need to exchange ideas of what is happening with their body, with whatever. But for sure, socialization is just living. And if it's with your grandma or with your 10 little siblings, that can look very different, and I don't think that you're missing out on something just because you're not 20 other kids your age all the time. I think
I wonder if the weighting system, the kind of bell curve of socialization, for example, is concentrated in same age groups with, this is the expected socialization, I should say.
True.
The bell curve is same age group, the main mass makes up that socialization. And then you've got grannies and grandpas and younger friends or younger cousins and things that make up very little. And so that's the kind of prescribed socialization. Now I wonder, should this even be a bell curve? Should the weighting system change? Like, should you be prioritizing older people to learn knowledge from them, because nowadays age, you go and ask Google, you'll definitely get the wrong answer. Mm-hmm. It's the answer they want you to have. You know, is the expectation of socialization wrong?
I think, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of how I'm seeing it.
Yeah. So
I don't think there should be a, because the narrative is that it should be heavily weighted of same age, your peer group, that socialization. But actually, socialization happens in many forms. I think it also happens between you and your dog.
So
that is a form of socialization. Yeah. You don't speak the same language, but your body language speaks the same. Or it's your body language at least has a language that you both can speak to each other. Like your dog will tell you if he's happy or sad. Your dog will recognize if you're happy or sad. Like,
and he knows way more about me than I know.
Definitely. I mean, my favorite story, I was just telling it tonight to some friends because they've got a Labrador. And we had a Labrador growing up as well. And I was like, you know, they're dumb dogs, but they're actually not dumb. There is no such thing as a dumb dog. They just react slightly differently to other dogs. But the story is my dad had a friend who had to sleep on oxygen all night. I think he had, I don't know if it was sleep apnea or something even worse. But the dog kept on going to the wife and waking her up, like nudging her. And eventually, like the fifth time, she was just like, okay, what do you want? Like, do you want me to go take you outside? And she got up and the dog sort of walked to the other side of the bed and just sat next to the machine. And she came to the machine and she noticed the tube was unplugged. Now, it's not necessarily dog intelligence, but the dog noticed a pattern. It sees there's something wrong. So the body language of the machine changed, and probably the dog noticed that that machine is necessary for my father. Like, I guess they see us as father and mother, but and then to have to go and warn someone else is intelligent. So that kind of like reading of body language and things like that, that is socialization.
It is.
You know, that's without even speaking words, you're socializing. So you're coming to understand another creature. So like, yeah, I mean,
so
that
true.
Can go deep, I suppose. But I suppose the answer here is socialization is probably a psyop.
It is, and I think we can be very relaxed about it, because I think it's almost impossible to not socialize, although it's one of the biggest challenges to set up your kid with a cool peer group. It is a challenge, because there are not so many unschoolers in this world, and we're most of the time not gathering in one town, and even if it's not a guarantee that you like each other. But anyway, I think... family is a great place to socialize. And even if it's just, I mean, it's just me and my son, we're just two people. But I guess he got a lot of real socialization through traveling, because he needed to connect with everyone around him, because it was only me or strangers. So he had to. And he couldn't even speak when we started traveling. So this was, for me, my relief. So this is done. He knows how to deal with people, and he will never forget that, because he had been to so many different countries, so many different languages, so many different cultural approaches, and he always did very well. I never thought like, oh my God, he's incapable of communicating. never. So I know that kids are just, yeah. And if someone is listening to this and it's like, oh my God, socialization, yes, just travel with your kids. If you feel like at home there is not enough opportunities to do so, just travel, because through traveling you have to connect. And even
perfect example is when I used to go on holiday as a kid, we'd always make friends with the other kids on the beach.
Yes.
And they were always different age groups.
Sure.
There was hardly a time I remember being friends with somebody the same age as me.
So
and my brother, who's a year younger, would, you know, we'd be in the same place. We'd all hang out together in the same way. So yeah, travel definitely just helps you socialize
a lot. A lot. Yeah, I've been asking about laws, and that's quite interesting because I'm coming from a country that is probably one of the strictest countries when it's about homeschooling and these kind of things. Sorry. So in Germany, you have to go to school or your parents go to prison. And this is the reason I left Germany, because I wasn't really okay with going to prison.
Oh, you don't like prison?
No, I had enough in school. I think yeah. I was already fed up with the structure. I was ready for a bit of freedom. I really was deep diving into that topic a couple of months ago because I did some research on that. And there are actually a lot of countries where you can just homeschool because nobody is keeping you from doing it. Although it might not be fully legal, there is nobody coming to your house and telling you not to do it. Plus, there are so many umbrella schools that are actually real schools that your kid can do courses or whatever, classes, and it's an umbrella school as well. So you can just cover that legal
aspect. What's an example of one of those umbrella schools?
For example, my favorite one is West River Academy. And I have an episode with the founder of West River Academy also, if you want to check that out. It's just a hilariously beautiful concept. It's a real school. You can do online stuff. And although also you don't have to. You just don't have to do it. And it's covering a lot of countries on this planet. And so I think if someone really wants to homeschool or unschool properly without being afraid of any kind of legal lashback, sometimes you have to move countries. It is what it is. I did it. And I felt really good afterwards because this is your kid's life, happiness, and your own happiness as well. So I think, and someone was asking me recently, but what if I can't move and it's forbidden in my country, blah, blah. I think, bad luck, first of all, if you can't move. And secondly, if there are enough people who are against something, we can change things. Even if it's just on a very small scale, we are actually here to enjoy life a little bit at least. So if we put in the power to change something, we might be lucky and be able to change something. So I'm not really into, this is forbidden. I'm into, should this be forbidden? So let's change it or not. So what do you think about all these, lawless, lawful people out there?
Well, I mean, I consider myself a bit of a libertarian. So I think leave people be and leave me the fuck alone is just one of my favorite things to say. So I don't agree with any of it. I think you should be allowed to think and do as you please, as long as you aren't hurting somebody else. I don't see the problem. And yes, I knew about Germany, which is why I asked you the question, because I know France is also similar. I think that's illegal. I know you're allowed to do it here in the UK. However, you know, the UK has other issues too, but at least it affords a different way compared to these two highly statist countries when it comes to homeschooling. It's just something I guess you have to kind of navigate, but it's nice to know that there's something like that option of enrolling in a school and sort of skirting around. I don't know, how does that fall in Germany? How does that work, that system?
I have no clue. I didn't try it out, but I heard from people who are doing it and who are successful with it. And I'm hearing about more and more families who are just not following the law anymore. And of course, they need a huge network of support. Like if you're just a single mom with your son, it's not working. Of course not. But there is something going on in Germany, and I really like that. So there's a movement, and it's growing. So Be strong.
How do you find it moving away a little bit from the law thing? But how do you find it as a mother, you know, having to do work, having to make life happen, and also wanting to unschool? What does your sort of day look like?
Freeze mode. I would say this is a good question because I'm very, very happy and I'm very lucky. So I cannot complain at all. I live a very good life, but I worked really hard for it. So I never thought like I cannot do it. I always thought I have to do it because I want my kid to be happy and to grow up in somehow natural. So of course, sometimes I'm just overwhelmed because like work and this, and then I have to do that. But unschooling is something that goes just by living. So this is just happening naturally. And of course, he has a lot of stuff he wants to do. And this is something you have to organize. And I'm just one person. So I have to say, okay, we cannot go on 7 trips today. We have to somehow make it reasonable day by day. And we have a huge dog as well. And so we are outside a lot. And I'm very lucky because we have the same interests, bushcraft, being outside, camping at the beach and these kind of things. So I need to say, sometimes I'm just overwhelmed with life itself, but life is beautiful. So I'm just very grateful for everything that I'm able to live to see every day. And it's a lot. It's a lot, I need to say, but it's beautiful, really, because I'm able to spend so much time with my kid. I could never, if he went to school, I wouldn't even know who that human being is. But like that, I really know this dude, this little fella, and he's really cool. So, and he's used to the situation. I'm not working a lot, so I'm lucky. I'm just working a lot on myself. So a lot of yoga, a lot of sports, meditating, a lot of dog stuff. But most of the things we are doing together, now he's now in an age where he's very independent. He becomes more and more independent. So I have more and more free time to.
I suppose, yeah, it gets easier as you go.
Yeah, so much easier. It's more challenging for your mind because the older they get, the more their own person they are. And you're like confronted with
concepts that you might never have thought about.
Yeah, never. Yeah. And it's very, very interesting, I need to say. But the hard work is done. He's his own. He's done with. Yeah, he's ready.
How old is he now?
He's 11.
Okay.
I would say like 10 is then they are done, really.
Wow.
They don't really
You know, that's not so bad at all.
No, but it's sad. It's sad. As well, because you really feel that change
Giving it away to the world now. Yeah,
you have to. They are doing it. They are like, okay, adios, amigos. I'm now my own people. So that is a hard change, but I need to say it makes it even easier to work on your own dreams, your own stuff. So that's cool, and it made me think about I need to have way more kids because I'm not ready to be that mom of a teenager yet. I'm just not ready. I have to be ready for it, of course, but little kids, like up to 10 years, it's just very different. And I really enjoyed that time a lot. And it hurts when it's over. It hurts a lot.
Well, and, I can imagine.
Yeah. And that was very interesting because the conversations we have, they're very deep. It's cool. It's really cool.
So it moves away from being a parent to becoming more a friend.
Yeah.
In a way.
And you have to be a very intelligent, cool friend that is good in taking the truth because they are dropping truth bombs in that age. Like they
have to be stimulating as well, otherwise you become a boring friend.
Yes.
So they teach you too, right?
Yeah, for sure. A lot. This is what I was thinking. The first 10 years, I was the teacher. I provided and provided and provided. And then when they turned 10, it's like, now you listen. I'm like, okay, now, okay, nice. The table has turned. The table has turned.
Class is in session.
Yeah, but it's nice. It's a really, for me, it's a new experience because when I grew up, my parents didn't really give a shit about these kind of things at all. But I do enjoy that process a lot, seeing that little man growing up into whoever he's about to become.
Nice.
Yeah.
And what about higher education? Like, what if you wanted to go to university?
He can. Whatever he want to do. So if he's telling me tomorrow, and he's not going to do it, but he wants to go to school, we're going to do it. It's okay for me. And
you take a more libertarian stance of this whole thing.
It's his life. And I'm pretty sure if he really wants to have that experience, he should have it. I mean, it's not, I want to try crack. It's, I want to go to school. Yeah. Do it. But if you want to go to university, for me, this is also part of the clown world. I would never advise my son to go to university unless he is really burning to learn something that he can only learn there. And then I'm
just like being a doctor, being an engineer, being something that needs that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even an engineer, you can learn on the job. Like, it doesn't. More like theoretical physics, for example, that you probably need to go to university for that.
I don't know. And I think they will change our society a lot because they are used to think for themselves. I met a lot of unschooling kids that are now grown adult people, and they're like, I could never go to university for what? They are very successful in their jobs. They have created their own jobs, their own. I think it's art, and they're very conscious people, and I like that a lot because the consciousness is for me is one of the most important things. And if he wants to go to university and be fed with knowledge, have fun. I'm not paying for it. get a scholarship if you're so intelligent to go to university. But yeah, anyway, my parents were like, he will have a fucked up life if he's not gonna go to university. But I went there and I'm not using my degrees at all.
No, I'm not really either, to be honest. The one thing I do stand behind is learning to be an engineer. They taught me a different way to think, and then I kind of capitalized on that and used that in way different forms. Very far away from mechanical engineering at all. Like Saifedean, for example. Mechanical engineer as well, but went into economics and wrote the Bitcoin Standard, which is probably the best book ever.
I think that is how it's supposed to be, following your soul path. And if university is part of that soul path, enjoy. You don't need a degree to be happy and successful. And even though I had this discussion with my parents, what does success mean? I'm very sorry, but we have very different opinions about what success looks like and feels like. For me, success feels like being wild, being in nature, being independent. Success for my parents looks like, a stable paycheck. Awesome. Cool. Enjoy that. Yeah, but we are all different. So who am I to tell my kid what he should be doing or should not be doing in his life? So, and the doors are wide open. The world is huge, and there are so many different ways to get into university. Even as an unschooled kid, there are no boundaries.
Yeah, I think it's just an interview process then, right? Yeah. They're not going to look at your GCSEs or your A-levels or whatever these things are. They're just going to interview you. Exactly. I've heard a lot of stories like that unschooled or homeschooled kids just go for an interview process and they get in.
So true. Yeah.
I should say my Wi-Fi is going to cut out pretty soon. I turn it off at night. So hopefully it doesn't cut out too soon.
No, don't worry. I wanted to tell you, I need to go to bed.
Okay. Good timing.
Oh, yeah, good timing, really. I really enjoyed our talk because what I really liked is that you were sending me the questions and I had to think about my opinion about that because normally I'm asking the people, like,
what's your opinion about that? Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that because I learned a lot, not only from your questions, but also from your approach to whatever is happening out there. I really like your way of thinking. And what I learned is mix people up, mix your kids. Just don't get stuck on the socializing part. It's a psyop. I love that.
I agree.
Pretty cool. Yeah. Nice. Thank you so much for being my guest, really.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Nice. Okay. Very cool. Let's see.
Love what you hear? Then please support the Wildlife Unschooling podcast by checking the donation link in the podcast description. And leave me a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and connect with me on social media for updates. And please feel free to drop me a text. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for being part of this incredible journey.
Yeah, bye. Adios. Adios, muchachos. Nee, ich koche jetzt gleich. Ich höre gleich auf zu arbeiten, dann koche ich. Bitte. Nein. Bitte. Nein. Bitte.